Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Good morning, I'm Mike Peskin for Brian Lehrer. Brian will be back tomorrow, so ease off the ledge, no need to do anything drastic. My guest right now says that all too often the word progressive is shorthand for I hate Bush and I am against the Iraq war. He wants to bring progressive back to its roots on the blogosphere. That means for him conversations about larger issues like racial equality, inclusion, gender politics, class. These are subjects that he says all too often the white blogosphere either overlooks or is afraid to touch with the proverbial 10-foot pole. Chris Rabb calls himself a social commentator who happens to blog. He's the founder and chief evangelist of Afronetizen.com. He was one of the few credentialed bloggers at the 2004 Democratic Convention in Boston. Actually, I was there. There seemed to be a lot of them. But we'll be joined later today by another blogger, Jared Robach, who blogs for Lies Before Breakfast. Chris, hi. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Yeah. Lay out your thesis. What are your issues with the progressive blogosphere?
I don't know what the progressive blogosphere is. it's a much smaller universe than I think people would think.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are a lot of people who are self-identified progressives who many of us aren't so sure about. You alluded to that in your intro by kind of identifying what a lot of people see as progressive, which is hating Bush and hating the war, which to me is a pretty darn low threshold for progressivism.
Well, if you look at the most well-known, which are usually the most widely read political blogs on the liberal side of the aisle, things like Fire Dog Lake and Daily Kos and MyDD, do you find the discussion lacking? Do you bang your head up against the wall constantly saying, why aren't they talking about X, Y, and Z?
I got a real confession to make for you.
Yeah.
I don't read a lot of blogs. And it sounds somewhat ironic, even hypocritical, but I think it's important to say why. You know, if I want to have kind of meaningful insight into a lot of these issues that progressives talk about, you know, I'll read The Nation,
mm-hmm.
Mother Jones, you know, Color Lines, and they were later to the blogging world, but, you know, they're catching up. And while they interact with a lot of these folks, I much rather go to the folks who have a level of expertise and insight that I find compelling. That's not to say that those folks who aren't, you know, veteran journalists on the left don't have something to add. It's just that that's not nearly as compelling to me. And these other entities, I think, provide more nuance and background to things that I think are very important issues.
Is it the case where you wanted, or at one time were you reading more blogs, you soured on them, you want blogs to be where they aren't, or what's been your progression with your relationship with the blogosphere?
Excellent question. You know, I mean, I'm an accidental blogger. I was pulled into blogging kicking and screaming in late 2003. A friend of mine said, you got to do it. And I'm like, why? I'm not a nerd. He said, you don't have, that's the cool thing about blogs. You don't have to be a nerd. You don't have to code. It's user-friendly. You can put stuff up there. You don't need an intermediary. You can update it immediately. You can add pictures and all kinds of stuff. And then kind of the inner gadgeteer in me kind of got excited. So, oh, okay, I have a digital camera. I have a audio voice recorder. I have, you know, all these gadgets I can use and integrate and do kinds of cool things with. And at the time, I was running a very large email list called Afronetizen. It wasn't Afronetizen.com. It was just Afronetizen. And I was emailing thousands and thousands of black folk and some white folk and Latinos and Asian Americans across the country related to issues germane to black folk. And that was being sent virally all over the place. And I was quite comfortable being below the radar without folks knowing what Afronetizen was and what we were doing. And then I toyed with blogging, and before I knew it, I get pulled in because 2004 was really the year that things kind of popped in the political blogosphere, and I was asked to blog at the Democratic Convention. But this is an interesting point. How I got to that point was somebody didn't read my blog and said, "This guy's great. We got to have him." Mm-hmm. No, it's because I made a phone call to a buddy of mine on Capitol Hill. Actually, he worked for the Democratic Party at the time. And I said, "My friend just sent me this article from the New York Times that said you guys are going to credential bloggers. What's that about?" And he goes, "I have no idea." He says, "I barely know what blogging is myself." I said, "Okay." I said, "Well, you know what? Whatever you do, you should make sure that you have a diverse group of bloggers there, because black folk are the base of the Democratic Party. No one can win as a Democrat without the black electorate. So it would be a travesty if you had all white bloggers." And he goes, "Yeah, that's a good point. Hey, would you do it?" I'm like, "What?" I just started. You know, I don't even know all the tools. I don't know all the lingo. So I said, "Sure, what the heck?"
So you were thinking at that point, well, there's got to be, I mean, I just started, there's got to be some more prominent black bloggers
I was thinking
than men.
There are other people who can do this work.
And there just weren't, or they weren't
well, I mean,
well-known?
No, I wasn't the first.
Right.
And there were, but at the time, you know, I was not aware of the range and depth and talent that existed in the black community of folks who were self-identified bloggers, because I myself was not reading blogs at the time. I was taking content that I had that I was distributing through email and making it available on my proto-blog. That's what I was focused on, and I was not trying to get content from other bloggers. I was getting content from other independent media. So it was a I wasn't really part of the blogosphere. I just happened to blog. I was using it as a tool, not as a kind of a political statement saying, snubbing my nose to whomever. I was just doing something as a social entrepreneur, as a civic enterprise, and I got thrust into the blogosphere. And so I don't really feel like I have a home there, not because of any kind of animosity. It's just that's just not my thing. It's a means to a greater end.
Well, on your site, and we're talking with Chris Robb, who is Afronetizen.com now, and it used to just be a more of a, what would you call it originally? It was a proto
blog,
listserv. Or a listserv, right?
Yeah.
But here's my question, and I was reading your blog, and forgive me if this is just something you linked to rather than something you wrote, but you referenced you played on the word blogosphere, and you referenced a blackosphere and a whiteosphere. Is that what you think that, or is that how you perceive the blogosphere, the progressive blogosphere, shaking out right now? Two totally different things that aren't really talking to each other? One keeping up the gates, not allowing the other one in?
I think that's another Chris and a white Chris at that.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't make those expressions, but I have implied or said that there is a certain level of segregation that exists online. But, you know, when I say that, that's someone who grew up in segregated Chicago. All right, that's a black person talking who is used to living in a segregated America. But here's the interesting thing. Many of my colleagues, regardless of class or origin, see society as still largely segregated. And that's not something that I hear explicitly from white liberals. Now, I hear that from white progressives, but I don't hear that from white liberals.
What's the difference between progressives and liberals?
Well, you know, you can say I'm splitting hairs, but I definitely think there's a difference. And the problem is no one chooses to make their definitions explicit. But I think what liberal has become, I'm not saying this is the origins, but I think what liberal has become is a kind of paternalistic, let's help the blacks, you know, let's make the world a better place. Let's, you know, do that, but let's just kind of fix the edges.
Right.
And progressivism is more inclusive. It is empowering people to help themselves and to work in an equitable fashion to level the playing field. I'm
so
not
sort
sure.
Of a limousine liberal versus a get your hands dirty kind of aesthetic.
Yeah. I mean, but it's also acknowledging it's also acknowledging the set of privileges, largely unearned, that we all have. So if you're a liberal and you say, well, I'm doing this because this is the right thing and this is how I've gotten to where I am is because I believe in the goodness of all people, but you don't acknowledge that you wouldn't be able to have exert that power influence if you weren't middle class, or if you weren't white, or if you weren't straight, or you weren't Ivy educated, or whatever. And I think it's important that we all, not just white people, I mean everybody, acknowledge the different intertwined sets of privilege that benefit us. So that, I mean, the reason you're having me on this show is not because I'm the best blogger, or because I'm the only black blogger, or have the largest, you know, blog on the internet. It's because one of your producers saw me speak at a panel.
Right.
I was on that panel because I was on a previous panel. If you keep going back, it's because I leveraged the fact that I had the benefit to go to an expensive college, and that I interacted with the right people, and I worked on Capitol Hill. Now, that doesn't make me a bad person, but it's true, right? So somebody who has the same talent or more but did not have the benefits that I had, they're not in the conversation. So if you apply that to the blogosphere, that means that there are people who would identify as progressive who don't have voices because they're not being validated, because they don't share certain things in common with the folks who are the ones always at these events and conferences and so forth. And so I'm always trying to say, okay, there's me, but there are other folks too. So if you look at my blog role, I try to make it as diverse, not diverse in terms of ideology, because I don't think the right needs any more airtime, but you have black feminists, you have black folk from rural America, you got folks who have all kinds of backgrounds. But the problem, too, with the blogosphere is that it does privilege people who have more free time. So I don't know how many truck drivers and waitresses and janitors are reading Afro-Netizen, but their voices can at least be acknowledged, their positions can be acknowledged. But the blogosphere is just really one tool. Don't think of it as a movement in and of itself. It is just a platform, a tool, hopefully for something greater. Because the blogosphere in and of itself, it doesn't do that much for me.
Let me put a question out there for callers, which is, and our number is 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. I want to know if when you look at blogs, or if you read political blogs, you're conscious of the racial dialogue that is or isn't going on. Do you act? Is there anyone out there who seeks out black blogs, if you will, because they feel that the biggest, most well-known progressive blogs just aren't addressing the key questions that Chris here is talking about, questions like diversity, and questions on not ideological diversity, as he said, but questions like race, questions like equality. Give us a call about your perceptions, if there is something of a split between the white progressive blogosphere and the black progressive blogosphere. Our number again is 212-433-WNYC. And Chris, you were talking about how it was through some of your connections and your background that you got on a panel, which led to another panel, which brings you here. But isn't the whole promise of the internet that it's supposed to be a level playing field, and anyone with, you know, broadband access can put their thoughts up there and maybe get on a roll and get a lot of people to follow them? Or are you saying your experience gives lie to that notion?
Exactly. I think it's largely mythology. I think that the blogosphere mirrors society, and society has a lot of issues on these issues around race, gender, class. And as progressives, we need to not poo-poo the blogosphere and say, oh, it sucks, it's just a part of it. No, we should say it is what it is, mm-hmm. and we should use it for all that it's worth. But we do not have to romanticize it to make ourselves feel good or to give ourselves primacy. We should say it is yet another potentially powerful tool to mobilize folks, to reframe the issues. And we really have to reframe stuff. So if we're talking with the same language as people who we disagree with, it doesn't matter how many people we're reaching, because the frame is wrong. If we're talking about immigration, we're talking about affirmative action or these things in a way that is not sensitive to all people, then we got a real problem. It's just more of the same.
We'll also take, in addition to calls at 212-433-WNYC, we'll take email comments and comments on our webpage, wnyc.org. We did get an email from a listener who just knew what the topic was, and he wrote, why do certain groups, he thought we were asking the wrong question. He said, why do certain groups utilize blogs more than others? It isn't simply a black-white thing. And why do we have such differences in ability to reach that technological threshold? Do you think the so-called digital divide plays into some of what you're talking about, Chris?
Well, sure, but the digital divide is not race. You know, digital divide is largely class and to a lesser extent geography, right? So if you're in rural America and you don't have access to broadband, you know, you're cut out, right? If you can't afford broadband, you're cut out. But if you look at, here's an interesting statistic: the most connected demographic group in America through broadband are black people.
Really?
Even more than white people. Hmm. Now, I have my theories, but that's an interesting point. That suggests that the digital divide is not primarily or exclusively race. But if you look at black folk, most of us, I think we are probably the most urban group of Americans in the country. And those broadband providers are largely in and around major cities.
Let's hold it right there. We'll take a short break. We'll be back with Chris Rabb of AfroNetizen.com. We'll be taking your calls after the break. And I am Mike Pesca in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Hi, this is Mike Pesca in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian's in tomorrow. We're talking about black and white issues in the progressive blogosphere. Taking your calls. We're also talking with Chris Rabb. We'll be joined by another blogger in a second. Karen from Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Very good. Your comment?
Yeah, you know, I'm a social worker. I deal with a lot of black youth and their parents. And I just, you know, I heard...
Chris
speak about, you know, not reaching, you know, people who are truck drivers and waitresses. And I have to say, it's just so true that most of the kids, the parents that I work with constantly on a daily basis, they're just not using the internet and the computer, certainly for blogging. I mean, I don't even think they know what that word means. And it's just, you know, they're just not using it. And I don't know how it would be to reach, you know, this except through the schools. But a lot of them, you know, really still don't have computers. They may go to the libraries. But anyway, I just kind of wanted to throw it out there because I think part of the problem is literally not reaching the people like, you know, the truck drivers and you know, even more, you know, the younger people who... No, they're just not, you know, they may use it for their own purposes, IMing people, but
right.
They're just not, yeah.
Yep. All right. Thanks for the comment. Chris, what do you think about that? Your average or maybe your average 16-year-old white high school student says, I've got a blog, and your average 16-year-old black high school student says, what's a blog?
Well, you know, I haven't asked my grandma how to text message. I haven't taken the time to teach her.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't have a cell phone. She doesn't have that interest. She's not the I have taught my mother. She's a texting whiz. You got to use the right tool for the right occasion. Sometimes you need a hammer. Sometimes you need a wrench. I think giving teenagers a wrench when they need a hammer just doesn't make much sense. I mean, blogging is not for everyone, and I don't mean to say that in terms of a new form of elitism. What I'm saying is that kids are mobile. Right. Like my young cousins, they think email is for old people. You know, old people think that they're young because they do email. Right. So the question is how do we get more, you know, teenagers of color to blog, but how do we reach them with technologies that are going to be
relevant to them?
Yeah. And more ultimately, the goal is how do we expand the benefits that things like blogs provide to people? And expand it to as many people who are curious and in need of that. And that's not necessarily going to be blogging. Now, there is, you know, mobile-based, you know, cell phone-based blogging. I mean, only, I think, geeks and nerds do that right now, at least in this country. But,
or people with really small thumbs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The small-thumbed people have come together. But, yeah, I don't think we need to necessarily rack our brains about how do we get – more young people into the blogosphere. But how do we get the blogosphere and the benefits that it accrues to folks getting into the hands and minds of young people? And I think largely it's we need to give them the resources to create that reality for themselves, because young people have always been the leaders of social movements, always. Civil rights, this immigration movement that we're seeing in L.A., coordinated by young people. They've learning how to use text messaging, MySpace, that kind of stuff. And MySpace is a form of blogging. It's a very annoying form of blogging. I despise it.
Well, it depends. It depends what sort of MIDI version of a song that you have on your homepage. But hold there for a second, because I want to bring in a perfect person to talk about young people and race and blogging, because he is a 21-year-old, Jared Robuck. He is a blogger. His blog is called Lies Before Breakfast. He also has started blogging for MyDD.com. And hi, Jared. How are you?
Hi.
So,
how's it going?
Very, very well. You're 21, right? You go to City College?
Yes.
What's been your experience blogging? And with some of the things that Chris Rabb and that caller was saying, you know, you're a young black man, 21, I consider you young. You know, is it? Do you have to explain to the people in your social circle what blogging is?
Well, I just want to address something that the caller brought up about, you know, young people and blogs. I work at, well, right now I work at an after school program, and these last 2 months I did a class where I was teaching fourth and fifth graders how to start their own blog, and a lot of them didn't know what a blog was. And I was working with a group of Latino and black kids, and they were like, what is, you know, a blog? And after the class was done, they would come up to me every day, like the next Monday, like, Jared, I was working on my blog over the weekend. I've added these things. And it wasn't so much that I was trying to get them into blogging about politics or things that I'm into. I just wanted them to, you know, see that with this tool, as what Chris was saying, because blogging is just one small tool for people to get their voice out there. And they responded to it really well, and I was impressed by the work that they did. So, I don't know. That's been my experience with young people and
in terms of slightly older, younger people, which is to say your classmates at City College, would you say there's 100% recognition of what blogging is? Everyone you talk to is pretty much hep to the blog?
I don't know if everyone. I think everyone experiences some kind of blogging in one way or another. I don't think a lot of people are maybe have seen the political blogosphere, but they see, like, Miss Info, who's a radio personality on Hot 97, she has a blog. I know a lot of friends that go there. I know people follow celebrity blogs. Like, you know, there's all kinds of blogs. It's just that people find blogs that they're interested in. I think, and even some things are like bloggings and aren't called blogs. Like MySpace, you know, as Chris was saying, has a blog component there. So I think it's a pretty widespread thing amongst people in my age group.
Now, I know you also blog for the Obama campaign, and you blog for MyDD.com, which is one of the biggest progressive blogs.
Yeah.
When you, it's an aggregation, if you don't know what it is, they use a lot of different bloggers, and there are a lot of different voices. Are you seeing some of what we're talking about, that the conversation there is so based on not liking Bush and not liking the Iraq war, that things like equality, affirmative action, diversity have taken a back seat, in your opinion?
No. I mean, MyDD has a specific content focus. They focus on elections. They focus on analysis of polls and doing political infrastructure. They're not a general, you know, thing. So what you see on the front page there is things relevant to the topic that they're there for.
And tell me about, you have a few of these, right? You have something called Afrosphere.
Yeah, the Afrosphere is an emerging group of black bloggers, which I'm privileged to be part of, that's trying to organize and build our own infrastructure to, you know, it's like you guys were talking about, how I think if you look at the numbers for, you know, the demographics of the big blogs like Daily Coast and MyDD, the percentage of minorities that read those blogs is really small. And one of the theories behind that is people gravitate towards content that looks like them.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of people would like to think that when you're on the internet, there's no such thing as race. And I'm starting to realize that that's not the case, and that people want to read about the things that concern them. So that could be why people, you know, who aren't concerned with the polls and stuff like that don't read MyDD, and people who are concerned with, you know, affirmative action or things like that will gravitate towards other blogs.
Do you think that on the progressive blogosphere, and Chris, if you want to weigh in on this question too, but do you think that their discussion of race oftentimes just boils down to, you know, what percentage of the black vote can this candidate get, as opposed to what are the issues that's important to the black voter?
You can't make gross generalizations, but I definitely think that is the type of macro discussion that is happening without much nuance. And if the range of voices is not representative, then that's perhaps something you can expect. But that's a standard that we should improve on. And how we even know how to frame issues that deal with race. So when Jared was talking about kind of the content focus of MyDD, when you're talking about, you know, DD stands for direct democracy, and you're talking about elections and polls, you cannot discount or exclude explicit mention of race on any of those issues related to that content focus. And if you find people are talking about issues and are talking around race because they say, well, you know, it's technically this poll isn't about that, then you have a real problem as a progressive, because I believe real progressives acknowledge that race, class, gender, et cetera, have to be that everything has to be analyzed from those lenses. And that also includes whiteness, right? So you can't say the default race in this country is white. If somebody's talking about this is a black website, then someone also has to say that this is a white website. And white people feel very uncomfortable by that. Black people are conditioned to do that because of kind of history of the country and segregation and such. But we have to acknowledge that. I think more white progressives have to identify as white progressives. And I think that's very difficult for white people, particularly those people who are used to living in a more homogenous community where you haven't had to talk about race because everybody's the same race.
You know, a guy like Atrios or The Daily Coast or one of these well-known progressive white bloggers would probably not want to say that and not think that this is true. Oh, it's not a white site, it's for everyone. But in doing that, Chris, I know what you just said about that. They're making a mistake. Jared, what do you think? I mean, is it just too pie in the sky for Daily Coast to say, hey, this is for everyone, and then to ignore a lot of the issues that you and your community really want to get
well,
at?
Well, just in reference to Daily Coast, Marcos, I believe, is not white. He's Latino.
The two are not mutually exclusive, though, Jared.
Yeah.
I mean, you can be a white Latino. You can be a black Latino. But, you know, when we talk about Latino, that is an ethnicity that even the census defines. It is not
one thing.
Does not preclude you being black or white.
Correct. To answer the question, yeah, I think I was reading actually something that another blogger wrote, and he was reading a conversation that was going on at Daily Coast, and it was amongst a group of white people that were on the blog talking about race, and it was like they thought racism was over. And I mean, I think Chris kind of was hinting at this. If you live in a world where, you know, you're around other people who are liberal or progressive and think that they aren't racist, but they don't know a lot of black people, you don't think that there's race. And it's an uncomfortable topic to bring up if you're not used to seeing it every day. And in particular, when you think you're on the right side of things, like progressives do.
Right. We're going to appoint Supreme Court justices who have this opinion on affirmative action. Therefore, we don't have to engage. Let me read an email. This is from a listener named Harlan Harris. He writes in, much of the left blogosphere is explicitly partisan about winning. The history of identity politics in the Democratic Party is not one of success. Many bloggers are willing to de-emphasize identity politics in order to focus on policies that apply to everyone and that will lead to electoral victory. Chris, assess that argument. Talking about the Iraq war and George Bush as the president is a winning political strategy.
How you address these things, though, has to be tailored to the demographic at hand. How you reach security moms about the same issue is different than how you reach those members of the community whose sons and daughters have been extracted to die overseas. You cannot conveniently pull out race or gender or class for short-term gains, and I'm not even sure that you can achieve short-term gains by pretending race is not an issue. I am not a I'm not a true partisan. I do not have any inherent commitment to the Democratic Party. My grandparents, two of them anyway, were Republicans when most black folk were Republicans. And if there's a switch that it makes sense ideologically, then I will leave the Democratic Party in a heartbeat. But this issue is not about elections. This is if you're really talking about real meaningful change, social change, you're talking about racial justice, social and economic justice. Electoral politics is only one small part of a greater plan to create a movement that will actually have a type of long-term impact that this country desperately needs. And so if you just talk about four-year cycles, you're listening to the wrong people.
Let's get a call in here. Verna from Queens, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, thank you again, and thank you and Chris Robb for making this a very interesting topic. The blogosphere is an area that I spend quite a bit of my time in. I enjoy politics. I enjoy visiting all the sites. Unfortunately, I've never been to Rob's site because I don't know it.
It's afronetizen.com.
Pardon me?
Afronetizen.com.
Thank you.
Spell that last part of it.
Chris, go ahead.
It's netizen like citizen, so it's netizen.com, Afronetizen.
Okay, I'll check it out because I've been to all of them. The black blog that I often visit the most is Jack and Jill Politics.
Wonderful.
That's the one I know the most of. I didn't know that yours was there, but I suppose probably yours is geared towards a younger generation. But
no, actually it's not. And I'm glad Jared is on the phone too because that's one of the beauties of I've already added him to my blog role. So Jared, you're on it. I did that while we were talking, and that's the great thing about empowering people. Just you know,
well,
just
I have a blog of my own because I was visiting so many blogs that I said, you know, if I have a master's in political science, why don't I go out and say what I think on the issues?
Exactly.
Because I just think it's a wonderful way for people to get into the conversation, and I don't think enough of us in our communities are doing that. And I am just glad that this is the topic of the day, that you and that young gentleman is really getting people to know that this is something that we have to become a part of, and it's a great way to get our voices heard. So I just, you know, want to thank WNYC for making this an exciting topic.
Verna, I just wanted to ask, was one of the reasons you started your blog because you saw that there was lacking in content of the other big blogs that are out there, the most trafficked blogs?
Yes.
They weren't saying what you wanted them to say?
Yes, I didn't see enough of people who I knew were participating. So I thought that by, you know, having a blog and saying to them, well, this is my blog, you can visit it. And I list just about, you know, red, white, and blue on it, because I believe that, you know, politics is to the right and the left swing depending on who wants to give me what, sell me what. So I've listed just about all that. When people go to my blogs, they can get a taste of what's out there. And I, you know, people have complimented me on giving them that wide background of information.
All right.
And I think that, you know, there's a great opportunity. And as I said, I went into it because, as I said, politics is in my background. It's a part of my passion.
Yeah.
I majored in it in college. And I just felt that, you know, with all that was happening out there, let me put my piece out there, good, bad, or indifferent, and that's what I've done.
All right. Thanks very much, Verna. You know, this is so many people. Pew does studies about who reads blogs, and in 2004, Chris, when you were blogging at the Democratic Convention, I think it was 17% of people said they read a blog. Now it's the majority of people, and a great number of people have a blog. So that's one way to get people into blogs, is to give them a blog. I guess, Jared, that's what you're doing with those fourth and fifth graders in your program.
Yes.
So, Chris, what about that? Is that a entryway, you know, blog for yourself, and then you start to read the other blogs?
I think what Jared's doing is awesome. It's great. I do the same thing with old folk. And it's probably easier for Jared because Jared's from the digital generation, and all successive generations are even that much more digitally intelligent. So they pick it up and they're excited and they can do what they want, whether or not it's explicitly political or not. But see, here's the thing. How do we I was raised by a community activist grandmother who told me that everything is political, even when you flush the toilet. And that's my point of reference. So how do you explain, how do you show, instead of just tell young people or other disaffected people in society that there's a political element to everything, and then ultimately it is in their best interest to be a progressive. That's kind of one of my missions, is that if you just show people what's out there, they'll draw conclusions that will lead them towards a progressive path more times than not.
All right, Chris Rabb, founder of AfroNetizen.com. Jared Robach, lots of blogs, but maybe Lies Before Breakfast is your primary outlet?
It's been weird, actually, the last few weeks since I've...
Plug one, Jared.
Yeah. JaredRobach.com is the one I'd like to unplug.
Yeah, there you go. Jared
Robach.
The rest
of them are pretty well known.
R-O-E-B-U-C-K. And I'm Mike Peskin for Brian Lehrer. I'm about to register even when you flush the toilet.com. So don't anyone sit on that. Thanks a lot, fellas.
Thank you.